From the land of the free and the home of the Chiefs, this is the Locked On Chiefs podcast.
And welcome back to another episode of Locked On Chiefs. I am Chris Clark. He is Ryan Tracy. And we have a little bit of news to talk about. A lot of injuries hit Kansas City this past week when they played Oakland.
Yeah, and we're going to have to see who's ready and who's not. It is quite a bit of a long list, but I want to tell you guys, later in the show, we're going to talk with Matt Derrick briefly, and then I got with Joe Valerio, Kansas City Chiefs tackle from the 90s. Very interesting perspective on what's going on with this offense and this offensive line. A guy that has caught touchdowns from the greatest quarterback of all time, Joe Montana.
Yeah, I really like how you said that. That's kind of funny. But I get where you're coming from, and I agree. He is probably the greatest quarterback of all time. I don't know that I could put anybody above him right now. But, you know, I'm looking forward to being able to listen to that conversation because I was not a part of it. So that looking forward to that. When we get back and start talking about these injuries, though, you know, Frank Clark was the only guy that was limited. Everybody else that was injured did not practice at all. So you have two corners and two running backs who did not practice at all. And Spencer Ware is back in Kansas City, and he is wearing number 39.
Yeah, and I think that's the interesting part. They signed Spencer. Very familiar. Andy was very positive about, hey, he knows the offense. He doesn't have to go through the whole thing again. And when asked about what shape he's in, he's like, he looks like he's in pretty good shape. We'll see. That's not a direct quote, but for the most part, I find that a little bit interesting because I'm still a little unsure about whether he can really be in shape at this point in the season after being out for quite a long time. But clearly, the law firm of Williams & Williams was not available today. Neither Damian nor Daryl practiced at all. So the fact that Spencer's there along with LeSean and Darwin, I think that's important. There's rumor that Damian might practice this week, but we have yet to see it.
Yeah, and that's going to be a big question mark going into this game. Being down two running backs, I mean, I guess you can afford it because Sherman can always take some carries if need be, or he can catch passes out of the backfield, although that's not his strong suit. You know, I think you're going to be okay at that position. I really have concerns at corner because you don't have Fenton or Claiborne practicing this week, and that really makes you very limited is what you have in that corner group.
I agree. And Claiborne in particular, he's got the lowest completed passes against percentage on this roster right now. He doesn't play a ton of snaps, obviously not a starter, but gives you quality reps from the veteran perspective. And against Tom Brady, that's something you have to have. It's a shoulder with him. I am a little bit concerned. I didn't see him hurt the other night, so I don't know where it come from. Hopefully it's not a big deal, but not practicing at all, it lends itself towards thinking that it's something that might linger. Fenton, on the other hand, we saw it's a hamstring, another soft tissue injury. Don't know how that's going to go. I don't remember if Kendall Fuller came in after his injury or if they were platooning or something, but hand in hand with him going out is Fuller playing more. Fuller did practice in full with the thumb on Wednesday. So hopefully that can continue on Thursday and we'll see what happens Friday. So you got to think that he's got to play a full percentage of snaps with Fenton out.
Yeah, you would think so. And, you know, at that point you only have a couple of corners and it's going to be very intriguing to see how they platoon those guys out against Tom Brady. The one nice thing is Tom Brady doesn't have the weapons he's had in the past. You don't have Gronkowski. And that's a big thing going into this game. That is somebody that he's relied on for years that they just simply don't have. And yes, you have Julian Edelman, but if you take away Edelman or you at least contain him for the most part, he's going to be throwing to unproven guys. I mean, maybe Mohamed Sanu is back and maybe that's going to help, but Tom Brady still isn't on the same page with him, I don't think. And, you know, Philip Dorsett hasn't been playing. You still have question marks about their other receivers as well, with N'Keal Harry being just coming back from being injured most of the season, and their new guy, Jacoby Myers, I believe.
Mm-hmm. I got to tell you, Sanu's the guy that scares me because he's been a consistent possession receiver over the years, and he's a guy that can move the chains for them. I fully expect a double team on Edelman, starting with Tyrann Mathieu and probably another safety over the top. I think you bracket him and you take your chances with everybody else, especially with Sanu. It's an ankle issue with him, so he can still run straight line as good as probably ever. But where he gets you is the breaking routes underneath, the inside stuff, and with an ankle that's going to have to be spatted at the very least, I think that's going to limit him a little bit. So I agree with you. Edelman's got to be the key. but you just got to hope that guys like N'Keal Harry and Dorsett's the guy that really scares me with that speed.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I get that. And that's going to be a big question mark heading into this week.
Yeah, we'll have to see how it goes. And we're also going to be seeing how it goes with Matt Derrick. We'll be back in a minute with him. And then stick around for Joe Valerio and a long conversation I had with him for the third segment. So we have Matt Derrick back with us. And we need to move ahead and obviously look at this is a prime time matchup, one that is important not just to win-loss record seeding and all that, but this is a game that can flip where games are played in the postseason, particularly between these two teams. With a loss, the Patriots fall out of first place in their division. I can't believe I'm saying that, but it's the truth. And it puts them into the fifth spot. That team in the wild card week will then match up with the fourth seed that right now is the Kansas City Chiefs. So by winning this game, the Chiefs can actually guarantee themselves a rematch with the Patriots in Arrowhead. And I can't say anymore how astounded I am by that, Matt. Could you see this coming at all?
The way this has unfolded, not exactly. I mean, mostly because, you know, you just don't see Buffalo hanging in there the way that they have. But hey, they're there, so give them credit for that. But I tell you what, the Patriots have a secret, and you know, and they've told us what it is all along, because you look at what the Patriots have gone out and trying to do personnel wise. They've been trying to get receivers. They've done it all season. I mean, the fact that they're out making moves, you know, picking up an Antonio Brown, make the deal for Mohamed Sanu. I mean, that is all the evidence you need that this Patriots team and that Bill Belichick has realized since the beginning of the season that they don't have the receivers for Tom Brady. I mean, you can, I see a lot of people, you know, say the Patriots are done, Tom Brady's done. I've heard that before, and it's until I see Tom Brady on the sidelines done for sure, I'm never going to buy it.
That almost sounds like a broken record, doesn't it?
It does. But in this particular season, I mean, I do not see any of the struggles that the Patriots are having, having anything to do other than the Tom Brady doesn't have a whole lot of guys he can trust. He's got Julian Edelman. He's got James White. And after that, there's just not much else there. And you saw it on their game Sunday night. I mean, Mohamed Sanu had a really bad drop. You know, and Brady is yelling at his receivers about running the wrong direction and the wrong routes and not making the adjustments that they need to make. If they figure that out, hey, Patriots are going to be fine. The Chiefs might be hitting them at just the right time that, you know, that this is a team that's struggling. And the way that the Chiefs defense is playing, I think it actually could be a really good time for this matchup. And maybe it favors them. But you're right. From a standing standpoint, I mean, this is huge for so many reasons, because, you know, if the Chiefs lose this game, they're locked into playing in that wild card round. I mean, they're going to be the three or the four seed. There's absolutely no doubt about it. There's no way out of it. They win this game, and suddenly you not only bring the three seed into play more, but you put the two seed back into play too. And they still have to have some help to get there, but beating the Patriots is the first huge step. And you're right. I mean, that changes a lot of things. I mean, it could mean that you could, you know, end up missing the Patriots in the first round. You could get home field advantage in the first round. I mean, there you could get a bye. I mean, there's a lot going on there.
All right. So here's my question. You are looking at this game going into the Patriots, and yes, this could be huge for seeding. Yes, it could be huge for the playoffs. I have to wonder, do you think Kansas City not necessarily changes their offense, but puts new wrinkles into their offense this week for the Patriots? Because the Patriots have really struggled against the pistol, and I think that Kansas City has the ability to run that type of offense if they want to. It doesn't have to be an entire time, but I think a play here and there could really help them in this game.
Well, I think it's interesting you mentioned that, because I feel like there's two things that the Chiefs offenses had the last couple of weeks that have, I think, have been the struggles. One is that I think that they've gone up some teams that have played their RPOs really, really well. And that's been an issue. Now, the Patriots can do that as well. But I think the other thing is that I haven't seen a whole lot of creativity from the offense. And I do. I wonder if a bit of it has been, you know what, Andy Reid's banking a little bit, knows he knows this game. As much as these guys talk about the fact that, you know, take it one game at a time, you don't overlook anyone, it's a chess game. And Andy Reid knows that he's got the Patriots coming up. He knows there's a benefit to maybe showing something different on tape the last couple of weeks than what he's going to come out with. Because I don't remember the last time that I saw an Andy Reid team go into a Patriots game offensively looking anything like the way that they did the week or two before. This is going to be a different game plan. And I think that a little bit of it is that, hey, yeah, I think they have banked a little bit. I think you are going to see a little bit more. Pistol might be a great example of, you know, some things that you might see, elements that we haven't seen a whole lot the last couple of weeks. I almost feel like that maybe that the last, these game plans, especially the one against Oakland, maybe has been building. I mean, especially in the second half, Chiefs went at turtle mode. They went pure vanilla. There was nothing in that second half that was a giveaway for what you could put on film for the Patriots.
Yeah, I'm surprised by that as well. I thought they'd at least put some wrinkles out there to make the Patriots do more homework, try to sidetrack their preparation. But clearly, this is going to be strength on strength with the Chiefs passing offense against the Patriots secondary. Is there a way around that? If you're setting this game plan up, how do you go about trying to attack this? Because you know you have to get out to a lead. You can't do what you've done against the Patriots in years past, and you have to be efficient from that first 15-play script.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, the big thing is that you look at, especially the two games last year, you know, the Chiefs put themselves in a hole because they took too long getting going. Took them really, I think, at least a quarter and a half in the regular season game. And then, frankly, it took them the entire half in the playoff game to get going. Can't do that. I mean, you've got to get going faster. And a big chunk of that clearly is offensively, but I'm going to put a little bit on the defense, too. I mean, defense has got to get some stops. And it's going to be interesting because this is the first time we're going to see Steve Spagnuolo going up against Bill Belichick in that offense in Kansas City. And you know what? Well, Spagnuolo's had some pretty good success against Brady and the Patriots in the past. So maybe he pulls it out. Maybe he's got some secret weapons there. Maybe he's got some secret sauce for how to beat the Patriots. But yeah, yes, the offense absolutely needs to get going. And how they do that, whether it's, you know, relying on their fast break downfield offense, or whether it's we see a little bit more pistol, we see a little bit more getting the ball out quickly, trying to take advantage of the speed that the Chiefs have, just get the ball to guys like Hardman, get it to Hill, get it to Kelce in space, and let them work. That seems like it's what's worked in the past, but they have got to get off to a fast start. That's the key.
Well, I think one thing that is going to be very intriguing to watch throughout the week is how the weather changes. Right now, it looks like it's supposed to be about 40, 41 degrees when the game starts, and clear, not supposed to really have any precipitation during the game. I don't know if that really favors Kansas City or if it favors New England. It is their home field, and they are very successful in December against anybody. They hardly lose any games in December in Boston. So going to be a great game regardless.
Yeah, you got to think that maybe that the Chiefs playing in some adverse conditions against the Raiders, it was cold and windy. Maybe that's a good tune-up because it looks like whatever the conditions are in Boston on Sunday night, it looks like they're probably going to be a little bit better than they faced against the Raiders.
Well, let's hope. We can always cross our fingers that way. So, Matt, thanks for taking the time. Appreciate you taking a look forward with us. Folks, make sure you check out everything on ChiefsDigest.com, and we'll be back with you. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.
And when I get back, we'll be talking with Joe Valerio.
If you found $100 on the street, would you pick it up or would you keep walking? Of course, you take the money. So why do you keep picking winners and not betting on them? That's why I go to MyBookie. It's fast, it's easy, and they pay you when you win. Let's face it, where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on. I wouldn't be telling you guys to bet with them if they weren't the best. Do the smart thing if you're going to bet this football season. Bet with MyBookie. Did you know you could bet on games after kickoff? If by the second half it looks like your bet is going to lose, you can always just take the other side. If you're the kind of guy that likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. If all your picks come through, you'll multiply your winnings. And no matter how you bet, the NFL season is the best time of year. Join now and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. That's promo code locked on. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, and you get paid.
You guys are going to dig this. This is my conversation with Chiefs former offensive lineman Joe Valerio. You can find him over on the Believe Network. Well, Chiefs Kingdom, I got a treat for you. We were lucky enough to get Joe Valerio back on the show. First time on the show, but you guys, I say back because a lot of you don't know Joe before. He is like the epitome of a versatile lineman, started at every position along the Chiefs offensive line in the early 90s, and he's claimed to fame. This is my favorite part, Joe. Four touchdowns, is it, from Joe Montana?
Four touchdowns. Technically, it was three from Joe and one from a neighbor of mine here in the Philadelphia area, Steve Bono. We called him the Norristown Flash growing up before he went to UCLA.
Well, he counts too. I think that's a really interesting achievement. Probably the most touchdowns by an offensive lineman in Kansas City Chiefs history, let alone the league. He really gives you a versatile look at how offensive line was played, not only in the 90s when you were on the field, but today as well. Thanks for joining the show. I appreciate you taking the time.
Thanks, Ryan. It's great to be here. It's great to connect with Chiefs fans anytime I get the opportunity to do that and offer any insights or stories or background and information on this team. Obviously, will always hold a near and dear place in my heart to the people of Kansas City. It was the most fabulous place to live and spend time, my 6-year career spending it there with the people that are the most rabid fans in the NFL, and in a city that just holds the Chiefs in such high regard. It was a fantastic place to be, and I wouldn't have traded it for the world.
And you know, there's a lot of carryover. The thing that I like most about your tenure with the Chiefs was you were actually there for the changeover, right? From the power run over to the West Coast offense. What was that transition like as a player?
Right smack dab in the middle of my playing career was that changeover. And it was Barry Word right, Christian Okoye left, 34 dive, 60 plays a game. You know, we used to wear pads on the back of our elbows called Christian pads, because once Christian made his first cut, he was running anybody over that was in his way, and you did not want to get hit in the back by Christian Okoye. And so, yeah, we were smash mouth. I mean, even like I go back to the Jonathan Hayes tight end days, right? He was basically another tackle out on the field. We were, generally in that what we called six lineman set, because Jonathan probably had, I think I had more touchdown passes than Jonathan did. We always used to joke about that. Because we did make that switch over, right? And we go to the West Coast offense, where we went from, 30 plays in the playbook to 300, with various options and variables and things like that, that Joe could do at the line, or, just different pass routes and different protections, pass protections and blocking schemes. We became a very complex team overnight, and it changed it up front. If you look back on that offensive line, you look at the way that the guys maneuvered their way through their careers. Dave Dott, Tim Grunhard, John Ault made the transition, but some of the bigger power blocking linemen didn't really make that transition over. They kind of moved on to different pastures to make room for the Will Shields of the world. More some athletic. With Dave Zott getting out into space as an athletic, smaller, undersized guard. Some of the tackles that we had in that scheme, John was able to make it through, John Ault, but we did have to make some adjustments in the way that we went after our scheme for sure.
And now, clearly under Andy Reid, they're based in the West Coast, a lot of zone blocking scheme. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really flipped around more of the athlete type offensive lineman than a guy that's more powerful. And we've seen that raise its head specifically lately this season. What's your take on especially the interior three, the struggles in short yardage and not being able to move guys off of the ball?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, the dynamic of what defenses have done with their interior tackles, there is no way today I could have played interior with my style of play, the way that I blocked. When you're looking at 340-pound defensive tackles who can run, 4.7s, when you watch the combine, you see these mm-hmm. big interior tackles running. You can't one-on-one block them the way that we used to in the old smash mouth scheme. You have to zone. You have to double team. You've got to get your hips together, and you've got to try to push, what I would call the equivalent of 600 pounds. You got to get 600 pounds of pressure on that 350-pound player and move him back so that you can then get to the next level. There's no singling up anymore. You can't do it. The interior defensive tackles are too big. They're too athletic. Their technique is so good that they're impossible to block. So you make a great point, Ryan. You've got to double team. You've got to work together. You've got to, I coached offensive line, and we did a lot of inside and outside zone when I was coaching high school football for about 11 years. And, we used to do all these drills about getting your hips together and moving that down person, that down player, to the next level so that you can come off on the linebacker and get a piece of him as he's scraping over the top or coming underneath. And, you know, when you watch the way that this inside outside zone goes and you're watching players not getting a chance to do every snap together, you know, I think that's what hurts. I mean, I think you know, in training camp, you don't get the same work that you used to, right? I mean, September has become the new training camp, in my opinion, because, you know, back in the day when you went to training camp, you went away for 6 weeks, you played four full preseason games where the starters probably played half, sometimes three quarters of the game, depending on, you know, the mix that you were trying to put together. So when you hit September 1st, yeah, were you worn out? Absolutely. Were you playing together as a unit much better than they are today in today's schema with the whole, you know, non-contact and sitting out of, you know, training camp and starters not really playing in games? You know, by the time you get to September, the players, you know, the offensive linemen haven't played a whole lot together and they haven't gone into live situations a whole lot. Then you couple it with a little bit of injury, the way that the Chiefs have, you know, with Austin and Andrew and Eric and Tardif, like, you know, kind of they're rotating in and they're out and they're putting Wisniewski in. And, you know, when you don't have that, you know, when you don't have that cohesiveness of playing together every day, that inside outside zone blocking, you know, it gets a little rusty and you get a little out of whack when you don't do it every day together. So, I think they've done an admirable job given the rotation that they've had. And given the fact that, you know, they've dealt with some injuries, you know, with Eric and got, unfortunately, Mitchell going down and breaking that streak. What an iron man he is. Holy cow. I don't know how he was able to accomplish that, but hats off to him for that. So I guess, you know, long answer to a relatively short question. You know, you've got to play together. You've got to block players that are so different today than they've ever been on the interior. And if you don't have that cohesiveness going, it can be a really struggle. It can really be a struggle in the interior getting that push. And I think that's why the Chiefs are struggling right now. You know, I subscribe to this one stat website called Football Outsiders, and it has all of these statistics about offensive line play and, you know, about stuffed. They've got a category called stuffed, and they've got a category, you know, that goes for yards after run, and they've got yards. They've got a category for power push, and, you know, they try to use all these analytics and things that everybody's, you know, into today. And I am one of those people. I think it's great, and it kind of does match where the Chiefs are right now in being a little weaker in that sort of power run game. But you know, when you watch their pass protection and what Patrick does outside of the pocket and the way he gives the line time to adjust to the blitz and to adjust all those things, you know, their pass protection is fantastic. And they're at the top of the league when it comes to, you know, number of sacks and pressures and things like that. So, you know, it's a balance, right? It's a balance right now for this team to kind of find their way in the run game and to get a little bit more powerful as they're approaching the, you know, the pyramid of the playoffs.
My question would be, from your point of view, knowing what you know about these interior guys, and Eric Fisher aside, but with LDT, Andrew Wiley, Austin Reeder, Wiz, even Cam Irving, who I still feel is best at guard, what would be your optimal lineup for, like you said, balance, a little bit more power so that when you get in those short yardage situations that you just have to have, you have a better chance at actually getting that first down?
Yeah, I think you know, Coach Heck and Coach Reed, I think they have the right personnel out there. I do. When I look at their the way that they're all doing their jobs in the current structure, you know, and I think not just to take the easy way out and say, oh, I agree with Coach Heck's doing, I agree with Coach Reed's doing. You know, Coach Reed will always be an O-line guy, right? That's how he grew up in the business. I do think they have the right personnel out there. I just think what they need to really do, and sometimes you don't have control over this, is continue to practice, continue to play together. And I think we saw glimmers of that coming out off bye week, right? Going to the Raiders. I think we saw a little more push. I think we saw a little bit more of hips together for the guards. So, like, that's what I would tell fans. You know, when you sense any kind of run play coming, any kind of zone run play, okay, watch the teamwork that happens, the hips coming together of the guard and the center, or the center and the tackle, if it's kind of an outside zone play and they're kind of stretching the play to the outside, and watch how those players come together to begin a double team, you know, freeze frame it if you have to, watch their hips come together, and then watch them take that player to the next level. When you start to see the penetration come through the defensive tackles and they start, you know, sort of, you know, that color of jersey shows up fast, it means that the players aren't in sync. The interior players are not in sync. And I think coming out of the bye week, I think they had to have worked on that, because I saw much improved synchronization and hips together with the interior guys than I did in sort of the first part of the season when they were shuffling, going in and out and in and out. There really is a lot of timing that goes with it. And it's precise. It's very precise. You know, it's not as easy as it looks. So just, you know, a couple of 300-pound guys running into each other for sure.
Well, I noticed the same thing, and particularly when trying to combo block and get to the second level, I do notice that it is more of a concerted effort. Whereas early in the season, I felt like a number of the interior guys were really trying to basically chip mm-hmm. and then get to the linebackers for whatever reason. And I think that was part of the issue, but in putting hips together, that's a great point that I forget coaching points that maybe the public doesn't always know, but
yeah.
A lot of talk about Darwin Thompson this week and the differences between Darrell Williams, who is a wide-shouldered, bigger back, and the smaller, narrower Darwin Thompson, in terms of just how easy it is to get through these holes, particularly in the zone scheme. Mm-hmm. You have to think that that's more adapt for the smaller guy, or is that incorrect?
No, I agree. I think when you have a game, when you do the inside-outside zone game, you absolutely need the player who can see the color of the jerseys, right? And then find out where that weakness is in the line. And they need to be patient, but they also need to have sort of that quick turn. Like I would joke and say, I know this would never happen. I would love to see, just as like an experiment, a crazy offseason experiment, love to see a guy like Tyreek Hill coming from like 6 or 7 yards deep as a running back, right? I know, look, the football person in me knows that someone that size and stature is not going to be able to hold up for a whole season of running back. But I think it would be amazing to watch somebody with that kind of burst of speed be able to look at a hole and to be able to stay patient as they're doing the zone, you know, steps, and then all of a sudden make that acceleration. And I think a guy like Tariq Hill, if he could take the punishment of a 350-pound defensive tackle hitting him, or, you know, a Ray Lewis type middle linebacker hitting him on every play. That's not going to happen, obviously, but that would be a very interesting experiment. And I do agree with you, Ryan. I think the quicker the back hitting that hole, it's why, you know, when we were, with Christian Okoye, right, it was always ISO blocks. Can you believe Christian Okoye had a fullback? Right. He was bigger than most defensive tackles that I blocked in college. And, you know, he had a fullback.
You're making me nostalgic. You know,
who was like half his size. Right. But we ran so many isolation plays, right, where it was, you know, everybody's ISO'd up on their player. You had very limited double teams. And then you had the lead back coming through. You know, you had the Bill Jones, the Tony Richardsons coming through as the fullback, plowing, you know, into the linebacker. And then you give a big guy like Christian or Barry Word that downhill path and you plow 4 or 5 yards at a crack, right? But, you know, there's only so long that can last. There's only so much you can do with it. It's very limiting, right? There wasn't going to be a whole lot of, you know, RPOs coming off of that kind of football. We ran a lot of play action, but not a lot of, you know, a lot of RPO. And so, what we saw when Marcus came, right? Granted, he was at the end of his career, and, you know, I would never say he ever lost a step, because I think Marcus had the speed, you know, all the way through his career. He was so well conditioned. You know, you look at the Harvey Williams of the world, you remember the Priest Holm days, right? The Larry Johnsons, those backs that are fast, but yet can take the punishment. You know, I think back, I don't want to raise up any old wounds or open any old wounds, but, you know, thinking back to the Titans game and watching what Henry did, right, with his ability to hit the hole quickly, but also to hit it with some momentum. And I think if the Chiefs could find a running back like that, I think they'd be in really good shape, and it would give the linemen a little bit more breathing room.
Well, I'm all for it. I'm really interested to see how they do down the stretch here, because I think they're going to rely on the run game a little bit more, but certainly the pass blocking is the name of the game today. So I appreciate all of your insight. And folks, make sure that you check Joe out over on the Believe Network.
Oh, sure, Ryan.
Man, any parting thoughts about how you feel about this season and where they're going?
Well, my one thought going into this podcast with you, Ryan, was Marty Schottenheimer used to tell us all the time, when you get to this part of the season, the pyramid gets really tight fit at the top. And he, you know, as the teams get more and more geared towards the playoffs, and as you get into the playoffs, he used to tell us, man, he used to say, man, the fit is tight at the top of that pyramid and you got to squeeze people out. And I think we're getting to that point now. And I'm just happy that the bye week hit where it needed to hit for them to be healthy, get everybody back on the field, get the timing down. I think the trajectory of the teams that they've played have prepared them for this moment. This Patriots game is a huge game. And I think, you know, I'm going to go back to the old Marty pep speech. Hey, guys, the pyramid is going to get really tight. So get ready to knock somebody out. And I think the Chiefs have the team to do it. And I think they're peaking at just the right time.
Straight from Joe Lario, folks. Make sure that you're with us tomorrow for our preview matchups and predictions. We appreciate you listening to us today, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. Ryan Tracy is the founder of Rogue Analytics and the host of RGR Football on YouTube. Follow him there. Chris Clark is a senior analyst at ChiefsDigest.com, where you can get his work. Rate and review at Apple Podcasts and subscribe on your preferred podcast platform. Thank you for listening.